Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, January 17th, 2018. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a chilly 12 degrees and snowing here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on? I believe it was Friday. Yes, it was Friday. We titled the show Mind File Uploads, DAC Thinking, Blockchain, fMRI, and DNA Gene Coin. And we had talked a lot about blockchain over the last few live shows, looking at how this new centralized global database that is going to be used for all kinds of asset tracking, including you, could potentially, in the future, also be used to store some of your medical data, as well as your DNA. That DNA Gene Coin had talked about using your DNA to create a cryptocurrency, which I thought was bizarre, that had your DNA encoded in it, and it would spread across the internet and through all the new exchanges to help you live forever. But you don't want to be in this global database. They're tying in this Internet of Things, an Internet of Everything, including our smart cities, our self-driving cars, and all these other crazy things that they're working on. Remember, also, they're putting artificial intelligence into brain scanning systems. We talked about those fMRIs. We might get back there. So I ran across a story out of a publication called HealthAnalytics.com. Titled IBM Blockchain Artificial Intelligence Combo to Alter Healthcare. Remember Dr. Watson? We've talked about him a lot over the years. I haven't talked about him in a while. The combination of blockchain, this is this global database, and artificial intelligence has the potential to completely overhaul healthcare in just a few years. Combination of blockchain and AI could bring significant improvements to the healthcare sector, which is plagued by interoperability problems and big data analytics shortfalls, says IBM Watson Health Chief Science Officer Shamron Ebadoli. Speaking at the Fast Company Innovation Festival, Ebadoli announced that the company would be expanding its exploration of healthcare blockchain opportunities with a brand new CDC partnership. I thought the CDC was interesting. The CDC is going to be checking vaccines. CDC is already engaged in blockchain pilots around the public health responses and crisis situations. We're going to have some new ones here in the up and coming future, I believe. It is looking to further its ability to define the value-driven use cases for the technology. The new partnership will complement an existing collaboration between IBM Watson and the FDA, giving IBM additional insight into how blockchain, in tandem with artificial intelligence, could overhaul the way the stakeholders extract meaning from overwhelming volumes of big data in the industry. Yes. How do they get the big all-seeing eye to make sense of what data they're collecting from you? Blockchain is very useful when there are so many actors in the system, and it enables the ecosystem of data and healthcare to have more fluidity, and AI allows us to extract insights from that data and put it on a big dashboard. IBM has been angling to become a leader in the blockchain space with several projects in financial services, healthcare, and other sectors that could benefit from a distributed ledger approach to data management. Blockchain is a major focus for IBM as a whole. And as a big investment for IBM, of course, Watson Health thinks blockchain could have a major impact in healthcare and life sciences, especially around how data is being stored, shared, and used for its various applications. Blockchain purports to offer enhanced security and data integrity. Yes, it purports to. But remember, nothing is ironclad, as well as opportunities for patients to maintain more control over who accesses their data and how it is shared. Healthcare data resides in many different places, your primary care provider, the hospital, the lab where the results are processed. And if you have the patient's consent to share that data, you can pull together these different elements for use within a particular application or service that they need. A permissioned blockchain brings together trusted collaborators, or not. Each of them can join the chain or run their own chains, and the distributed ledger will track all of the events that are of importance for a particular iteration of a provider within a patient's care team or whatever task they are trying to accomplish. Payers are also interested in creating a more trustworthy data management system, which could better support value-based care and complex administrative processes involved in claims, education, and payment. And that would be your health insurance companies as well. As risk-based reimbursement continues to exert influence over payer-provider relationships, blockchain may offer an innovative approach to measuring and rewarding performance. Now, that's one thing. If you look at the beginnings of blockchain underneath cryptocurrencies, one of the things that happens is that you have mining, so-called mining on the blockchain or in Bitcoin. What mining actually is you as a computer on the network who have joined that network, your computer processing resources are being, I don't know if you'd even call them rented, maybe rented to work with lots of other computers that have also joined the network. And your resources are being utilized to solve algorithmic puzzles that then help verify the data that is being written to the database. And in exchange for that, you could pay a very small fee, fractions of whatever the currency is. So think about this. If they apply this to healthcare and they use blockchain to create a, quote, innovative approach to measure and reward performance, how's that going to turn out for you? You know, I used to joke about Johnny don't eat those Cheetos. But with the Internet of Things and smart pills and all of these things that will be ubiquitously connected to the world around us and pulling analytics and data statistics and bio. I don't remember, there's actually a term for that now. I ran across it in a research document the one day where they're pulling all of your biostatistics into the database and then analyzing them with something like Dr. Watson. And then providing the insurance companies with a future health score for predictive future health. And then telling you, well, you're going to have to walk 20 more miles on the treadmill to be able to get your health insurance extended beyond the end of the month. This could turn out to be a pretty frightening future. And if you think about it, will you even have healthcare if you don't make yourself available for them to bag, tag, and track? Because I'm going to guess that they might limit participation, except for those people who are not resistant consumers. So almost all of the nation's large health plans are currently implementing or actively planning to spin up a blockchain solution for at least some of their administrative needs, says a recent survey from Black Book, setting up a potential for a broader adoption in the near future. Activity in the payer space is quickly outpacing interest in the provider side. 68% of all insurance companies are aiming to take a blockchain approach to at least one business problem by the end of 2018, while 12% of providers are providing to do the same. And with the financial services and banking, the payer-facing use cases for operational efficiencies in the back-end process may be clearer at the moment, leading to speedier adoption rates. And yes, got to tell you, just by reading quite a bit about blockchain recently, it is coming in almost every sector. It's going to slap us right in the face. However, adding a new layer of artificial intelligence to this blockchain substrata could also drastically improve the way healthcare providers extract actionable insight from big data that is fundamentally more trustworthy than ever before. If a patient himself has verified that his records are complete, up to date, and accurate on a permission blockchain, artificial intelligence algorithms that stratify risk, bing, suggest diagnoses, or identify gaps in care may be more efficient and effective. A recent Frost and Sullivan report suggests that the convergence of blockchain with machine learning and AI could also reduce pharmaceutical supply chain issues. So be more and more drugs, creating a better clinical trial and allowing the integration of the Internet of Things data into the clinical care environment. A blockchain-based system will enable unprecedented collaboration, bolstering innovation in medical research, you're the guinea pig, and the execution of a larger healthcare concept such as precision medicine, thanks to Obama, and population health management. Now, where are they going to worry about population health management? Well, we're going to talk about a couple things. I ran across something the other day, and this was actually a while ago, but there was a story that came out January 1st, 2018, out of Heather Callaghan's publication, Natural Blaze. What is ID 2020, and are you ready to become impacted by it? ID 2020, they're also working on tying to blockchain, because this will be a full global ledger for tracking all assets in a trustless fashion, where everything is authenticated and encrypted, and it will be your digital online identity. An apparent new world order numbering of the world's population is in the works, which will affect many and impact every human being on the planet from the very first day of birth forward. This is from Catherine Frampich. Blow is the schematic of their game plan, and it is called the ID 2020 Alliance. And this is no bullshit, by the way. And this is the most comprehensive surveillance database probably to date and being implemented on a global basis, as you can see from the international organizations involved, governmental agencies feeding its statistical data, and the countries that will fund it. Maybe if I click on it, I can see it. All right, so we have the United States, the United Kingdom, Japan, the European Union, and Norway are all funding it. For birth registration, of course, vaccinations with child health cards, voter registration, refugee registration, and your national ID card. How great is that? Now, hold on, how do I get out of here? All right. So you will realize that the importance of vaccinations will play in the alliance and the apparent role Big Pharma has taken in providing ever-increasing numbers of vaccines, which probably will never see the legitimate testing for safety or efficacy, which we've covered that at length in the past. The other thing that jumps off the page is the apparent close relationship between Gavi, which I'm not really sure what that is, this is from the World Economic Forum, and the UN's UNICEF program. According to the webpage YN Alliance, Gavi was officially launched at the World Economic Forum in 2000 at a time when multiple organizations were pursuing siloed approaches to immunization, leading to inefficiencies and ineffectiveness in the market for vaccines. The organization's founding partners, including UNICEF, the World Bank, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, developing donor governments, and others, recognized that the uncoordinated programs and unpredictable financing were hindering vaccination efforts and hypothesized that streamlining funding was a critical driver of a coordinated approach. As such, this alliance not only coordinates action on the ground, but achievable scale and impact by operating as a multi-stakeholder partnership around a single funding entity. The alliance raises a single fund to support global immunization efforts and then channels that funding into vaccination programs, meeting criteria determined by alliance partners. The result has been coordinated programs, use of funding in large pool markets for vaccines that has driven down the cost of vaccinations, blah, 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 blah. And this is all bullshit from the YN Alliance webpage. The above brings to mind the Bill Gates' infamous statement made during his February 2010 TED Talk when he gave his famous equation for the global population control, which definitely includes the use of vaccines. You guys remember that? That was his reducing carbon down to zero. So wait, now let's talk about Bill Gates. So there's another story. Bill Gates has 7 predictions for the future. What's interesting about this is that when I was back in the tech industry, even from the early days, back in the mid-90s, when things were just starting to take off with the dot-com boom, Bill Gates and his yearly address about what the next years would hold always was something that I read religiously, because Bill Gates was always right on the money. He was almost a prophet at the time. But I noticed now, as I look back at it, that Bill Gates happens to be a prophet when it connects somehow to his investments. Now, here's something that I see interesting. Bill Gates has 7 predictions for the future. 21st century Nostradamus, Bill Gates, and this is out of futurism.com, so that makes more sense, has been proved right in his predictions concerning world affairs, societal changes, and technological advances multiple times before. But what does he think will happen in the next 20 years? In his 1999 list, it was hauntingly accurate, foreseeing the advent of price comparison websites, smartphones, social media, and bots. And over the last few years, his interviews and annual letters, he has continued predicting, and here's a selection of 7 of his insights. Number 1, in the next 15 years, 33 million people could be wiped out in less than a year by a pathogen. Oh, remember, Billy Gates has invested in a vaccine company, and he is very well invested in creating malaria vaccines and working with companies such as Oxitec with their genetically modified mosquitoes. Over the last few years, they have been looking at the Munich Security Conference, and Gates has warned that epidemiologists say that a fast-moving airborne pathogen could kill more than 30 million people in less than a year. All the more reason to get you registered in the blockchain with the CDC. This could be due to a mutation, an accident, or on purpose by some rogue actor. And while this may seem outlandish, similar events have occurred before. The most obvious example that we pull out of our hat every single time is the 1918 Spanish flu that wiped out between 50 and 100 million people. And don't forget the good old Black Death, which killed a third of Europe. He also believes that Africa will achieve the goal of becoming entirely self-sufficient in terms of food production due to a number of structural changes. Yes, they're going to give them 5G. First, better fertilizer and crops will be developed, causing an upward spiral of greater nutrition, leading to greater productivity. Number 2, developments in infrastructure are already taking place, such as in Ghana, where they're increasing the width of their highways, connecting production zones to distribution zones. And in Senegal, they are removing checkpoints that cause delays. Number 3, as your smartphone becomes more widespread, like I've said, spreading 5G to Africa, this will allow the communication of information, such as weather reports and market prices. Number 3, the lives of the poor will be transformed by mobile banking. Make sure once you get that 5G, we will get all of the Africans onto the blockchain so they can exchange their entrepreneurial decentralized spirit for bitcoins. They're going to buy them crop supplies. I don't know. Electronic banking systems will allow the poor to store and protect money digitally. There you go. Gates said in a 2015 annual letter, by the 2030, he says 2 billion people who don't have a bank account today will be storing money and making payments with their phones. Number 4, in the year 2035, poor countries will no longer exist. I don't know, it sounds like Bill Gates has been hanging out with Kurzweil. Gates cites how much the world has changed during his own lifetime and moving from a world segmented into the Soviet Union, the Western Allies, and everyone else to the world we see today as a precedent for how much it has a potential to change in our future. He wrote in his 2014 letter that, quote, aid is a fantastic investment and we should be doing more, more vaccines. And it saves and improves lives very effectively, and it lays the groundwork for long-term economic progress. I don't know. Do we want to read more? Well, let's move on, because his first one was vaccines. So getting back to the blockchain and Microsoft, Microsoft and a company named Accenture unveil a global ID system for refugees. Americans can show all sorts of documentation, such as their social security cards and diplomas. And I was also reading that maybe blockchain will take over social security numbers to show who they are. But for those countries torn apart by war or politics chaos, it is much harder to prove their identities. That's why a new software tool unveiled at the United Nations is a big deal, and it will let millions of refugees and others without documents whip out a phone or other device to quickly show who they are and where they came from. The tool, developed by Microsoft and Accenture, combines biometric data like your fingerprints or an iris scan and a new form of record-keeping technology known as blockchain to create a permanent identity. In practice, this means someone arriving at a border crossing could prove that he or she had come from his refugee camp and qualifies for aid, or a displaced person in a new country could use the ID system to call up his or her school records. The tool doesn't have a name yet since it is at the prototyping stage, but it will get one soon. Approximately, and I think it's called ID 2020, approximately 1/6 of the world's population cannot participate in cultural, political, economic, and social life because they lack the most basic information, which is documented proof of their existence. Now, wait a second. I'm here, yet I am not documented to exist. Well, maybe that should be a good thing. I'd like to live under the trees. Establishing identity is critical to accessing a wider an ever-expanding range of activities, including education, healthcare, voting, banking, mobile communications, housing, and family and child care benefits. And think about this. I've also read about using distributed autonomous organizations from like landlords or even banks that own a property, and you would be paying for that property, whether your rent or your mortgage, on a monthly basis, maybe even your car. Electronically, once your payment gets there, boop, your keypad or your biometric ID is turned on for one more month or whatever the autonomous contract, smart contract has been executed as. And once you don't have enough qubits in your account one day, all the locks lock automatically and you no longer have access. And think about that. And this is even going to be for probably buying your food. If all of our economic system is going to be exchanged in these little electronic chits. whatever we are weaving here is not a good thing. And they're going to keep selling it to you that this is the newest innovation. It is exploding like never before. It's the blockchain revolution that is going to come slap you in the face. And that really is what's going to happen. People have no idea. The companies have been working on this new system since last year and unveiled a prototype at a summit in New York called the United Nations ID 2020 Summit. Here's a picture that shows what the system looks like on the phone of a user. And it says, granting access. Boop. Here's your biographics, your education, your work permit. And I could see that there could even be another tab here, your health and vaccination records. Digital ID is a basic human right. Sure, they're going to sell it to you that way, says managing director at Accenture. And he likens the new ID technology to the internet naming system. And that would be your DNS, which gives a unique address to any given website. This new ID system is especially promising because of the blockchain technology, which provides crucial privacy features until, of course, it gets hacked. And it lays obvious concerns about a system being abused by all-knowing global governments, except for the surveillance portions of those governments who work rogue outside of the establishment. Blockchain is a tamper-proof ledger system run across multiple computer systems. Once a certain number of computers confirm a given piece of information to be written to the blockchain, such as a financial transaction or, in this case, an identification tool, the fact is then recorded as a permanent record on the chain. In the case of a new global ID system, it works by storing personal information in such a way that the person who owns it is the only one who can grant access to it. Other entities, such as an organization or a school, can share relevant records tied to that person and write it to the blockchain, but the person controls who else can see it. Accenture's engineer explains that cryptography helps ensure that organizations who access a person's ID record can only do so for purposes of authentication, confirming that they are who they say they are and not for tracking them or getting access to their data, or so they tell you. Microsoft's main contribution to the project is supplying computer infrastructure through its Azure cloud service, and the company also works with the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance, which is an open source software group that develops blockchain standards and software, I thought. Accenture, which caused waves last year by proposing a system to edit blockchains, ding ding, predicts that the ID system will soon be in use, but as yet to identify targets for its adoption. So don't worry about it, because it is coming. So I ran across something this morning out of a publication titled Seeking Alpha. I think we've read out of here before, titled Blockchain Revolution, Forget the Crypto Coins. This is by Austin Craig, January 16th, yesterday, 2018. In summary, cryptomania is accelerating GPU sales. And remember, we've talked about GPUs. Those are your graphical processing units. Those are what have sent the creation of artificial intelligence on an exponential increase for productivity. That gave AI, robot googly eyes, and both AMD and NVIDIA is the leader in GPUs, will benefit from these. So when I look out at the blockchain, the author says, I see utter mania, and I would have to agree. A few years ago, Google Glasses were hot. Before that, it was 3D printing. Before that, it was virtual reality and nanotechnology. But now is blockchain's moment, and this mania produces all sorts of odd events. Kodak announced their use of blockchain for photographs, and to start an initial coin offering. And a tea company also has entered blockchain. Remember, they put blockchain in their name and stopped making tea and started making blockchain software. Prior to that, a metals mining company flipped the script and has now entered the Bitcoin mining fray. It is madness, but can we profit from it? Well, if you want to gamble with some of the various 1,400-plus electronic coins, feel free. However, being a little risk adverse, I'm going to stick with the two majorly traded companies that are empowering the blockchain, and that would be AMD and NVIDIA. I won't cover NVIDIA here because I view NVIDIA as a buy and hold for a 10-year kind of stock. And what will AI, automotive, drone, and warfare look like in 10 years? Well, warfare will change drastically. If a car can auto drive with some success, then tanks can engage in auto combat with some success. Remember, Russia actually illustrated some of that with their, I don't remember the name of the company, but one of their big tank manufacturers. Granted, it may not be as flexible as a human crew, but going 100% self-autonomous will have some advantages, such as space-saving weight and a lower hull design. But at this juncture in time, crypto madness has overwhelmed AMD's ability to keep up supply-wise, and the end result is that the AMD GPU prices are going through the roof. Case in point, Best Buy has an AMD 570 for a mere $369.99. Normally, this is a sub-$200 card. AMG's 588 gig model should be around $250, but it's almost $500 now. And this insanity confirms extreme demands. But now you're thinking, oh, it's just an isolated incident. No, it's worldwide. And, you know, I used to have some stocks in AMD way, way back, and I don't know what happened to them, whether I sold them. I remember they were only like $8 a share at one point, and I'm sure they're a lot more than that now. So why stop at just one? Let's look both at AMD and NVIDIA to see how widespread this is. Let's scroll down. There's chart after chart after chart. The charts reflect last summer's cryptocurrency hysteria, but the recent demand is even higher. NVIDIA benefits from this, obviously, as they are not nearly as supply constrained as AMD. And this overwhelming demand impacts both companies in a very positive manner, come both this quarter and the following quarter's earnings. With that, we have increased our position in NVIDIA and may well expand out AMD's option holdings. And we expect AMD, and this is from an investment, I think this is an investment blog, obviously, we expect AMD to beat earnings and for the stock to either ramp up before earnings or have a pop afterwards. Obviously, we will hedge just in case via the purchase of cheap puts before the earnings, because life can throw you curveballs at times. So I don't know enough about investing to know what that is, but that would be some sort of hedge fund. So if it goes down, you win as well. So, all right. We're getting all that. AI is cranking right along. And we have now, this is a story that I must have missed. This is from a year ago, January 10th, 2017, out of fortune.com. You can now download an artificially intelligent doctor. So if you have ever traversed the morass of WebMD trying to figure out if that pain in your right arm may have more serious medical condition, well, then you just know how hard it can be to pinpoint the most likely diagnosis and its level of urgency amid a sea of information. Digital health firm HealthTap wants to overcome this dilemma with its newest mobile app called Dr. AI, which launched in January of 2017. The platform digitizes a healthcare triage, and HealthTap founder and CEO Ron Gutzman tells Fortune, just the process of assessing the level of medical risk facing a patient and their first step in the treatment pathway. Gutzman says that the problem with using conventional search engines to look up medical symptoms is that it is ineffective since they produce purely semantic results. Google cannot incorporate information like your age, your weight, your medical history, and then tailor those results based upon those parameters. But I bet blockchain could. It also can't ask follow-up questions to narrow the field of possible ailments. That's where AI Doctor comes in. The software relies on an individual's patient's medical profiles and knowledge gleaned from 105 physicians who are triage experts for over more than a half of a decade. Over the past 6 years, we have collected data from tens of thousands of leading U.S. doctors who have collectively triaged millions of patients throughout their careers. We have used this data as a training set to prepare Dr. AI for helping triage patients at scale. Gutman gave me a live demonstration of how the system works, emulating a number of different hypothetical patients, an older woman, a younger male, etc., with different health histories. And Dr. AI asks you to specify various symptoms throughout your body, lightheadedness, pains, fatigue, and so on, and ask the kinds of follow-up questions that a physician normally would based upon the replies. Finally, it compiles a list of the most and likely causes for the symptoms and ranks them in order of seriousness. If a potential diagnosis only requires a quick doctor consult, Dr. AI lets you know if you should be headed for an emergency room ASAP, lets you know that as well. And the system can also integrate HealthTab's broader cloud-based mobile digital health platform, which connects patients to doctors and specialists via video chat, phone, and text. And the Dr. AI app is now available to all consumers for both Android and iOS. How great is that? So, all right. Now, we've talked about Bill Gates. We've talked about blockchain. We've talked about the UN ID 2020 on blockchain. We have talked about Bill Gates' investments and his warnings for the next 7 years, one of which happens to be about global pandemics. We've also read about DARPA and their pandemic platform. They were looking for bidders to help remove the viral threat, and they gave them 2 months to stop Pandemic X from taking hold. DARPA aims to develop an integrated end-to-end platform that uses nucleic acid sequences to halt the spread of viral infections in 60 days or less. And this was also from 2017. Over the past several years, DARPA-funded researchers have pioneered RNA vaccine technology, a medical countermeasure against infectious diseases using coded genetic constructs to stimulate production of viral proteins in the body, which can in turn trigger a protective antibody response. As a follow-on effort, DARPA funded research into genetic constructs that can directly stimulate production of antibodies, and they are now launching the Pandemic Prevention Platform, or P3, it's more affectionately called, aimed at developing that foundational work into an entire system capable of halting the spread of any viral disease outbreak before it can escalate to a pandemic status. Yeah. Did you get your shape-shifting immune system vaccine? Well, let's check the blockchain. That's what I see this as. Such a capability. And we also ran across in our research that DARPA is looking at the blockchain to secure things such as nuclear codes and military satellites. So why not some of their biowarfare research? Remember, a lot of the institutions in the Department of Defense that had their hands on anthrax and smallpox found things that they shouldn't have been doing being done. So there was no proper chain of command. Such a capability would offer a stark contrast to the current state of art for developing and deploying traditional vaccines, which is a process that does not deliver treatments to the patients until months or years or even decades after a viral threat has emerged. DARPA's goal is to create a technology platform that can place a protective treatment into health providers' hands within 60 days of a pathogen being identified and have a treatment induce protection in patients within 3 days of administration. We need to be able to move at this speed considering how quickly outbreaks get out of control, and the technology needs to work on any viral disease, whether it is one that humans have faced before or not. Guys, this really is that shape-shifting immune system we've been talking about, and I learned about in 2006 when I attended some emergency management classes that were being funded and provided by FEMA in my local community. Recent outbreaks of viral infectious diseases such as Zika and the H1N1 influenza, as well as Ebola. Remember, fear, fear, fear. Those all went away for a while, but I think they're about to come back after this really cold winter, have cast into a sharp relief the inability of the global health system to rapidly contain the spread of disease using existing tools and procedures. State-of-the-art medical countermeasures typically take months or even years to produce, develop, distribute, and administer, and these solutions often arrive too late, if at all, and in quantities too small to respond to emerging threats. But in contrast, the envisioned P3 platform would cut response times to weeks. Yeah, with lots of testing, I'm sure, and stay within the window of relevance for containing an outbreak. It's time for you to get genetically modified, Johnny, because that will save you from this pandemic sweeping the globe. The key is to undertake nucleic acid-based technologies, those that are centered on DNA and RNA, including some developed under DARPA's autonomous diagnostics to enable prevention and therapeutics, more affectionately known as the ADEPT program. These use tools, and scientists can identify protective antibodies from recovering patients, and then through a biological version of reverse engineering, manufacture genetic constructs that, when delivered, can instruct an individual's body to produce similar protective antibodies. In significant quantities of these nucleic acid blueprints can then be rapidly manufactured and compared to state-of-the-art antibody production methods. What is required now are breakthroughs in three other technology areas to bridge the gap past DARPA's achievements. Yeah, well, that's a frightening thought. So we need even madder scientists out there and overcome the remaining bottlenecks that hinder the rapid response to pandemic threats. The P3 program will pursue innovation in these three areas. Number one, growing viruses needed to support evaluation of therapies in laboratory tests. Number two, subjecting antibodies to rapid rounds of evolution outside of the body to increase their potency and their virulence beyond what even of the most effective antibodies obtained from the infected patients. And they were already working on that with things such as MRSA up on the International Space Station. Elon Musk actually took a dose up there, and we found out that viruses become more virulent in space. Number three, develop a means of efficiently delivering nucleic acid-based protective treatments, since the technologies used to administer conventional vaccines do not really translate. Achieving and integrating breakthroughs in all these areas will require choreographed cooperation among researchers and engineers specializing in such areas as immunology, microbiology, virology, medical infectious diseases, molecular biology, and medical countermeasure product development and manufacturing. So step right up. People, I'm telling you, I know this is going to come. They're going to launch some sort of bioweapon on the public to get you to step up, and they just have pushed more informational clinical trials. Well, this is going to be the real-time test of all this technology. So another article that came out, the printed survey sent me yesterday, out of Heather Callaghan's publication, Natural Blaze, titled The Pentagon's Bioweapons. We've talked a lot about the biowarfare program, the Pentagon, Fort Detrick, Maryland, Plum Island, Manhattan, Kansas, where it was moved to, and how vaccines are all a part of this whole program. There were lots of Nazi scientists that were involved there as well. Listen to this. This actually caught me a little by surprise. The U.S. Army regularly produces deadly viruses, bacteria, and toxins. And this is January 16th, 2018. In direct violation of the U.N. Convention on the Prohibition of Biological Weapons, hundreds of thousands of unwitting people are systematically exposed to dangerous pathogens and other incurable diseases, and biowarfare scientists using diplomatic cover test man-made viruses at Pentagon Biolaboratories in 25 mad science countries across the globe. These biolaboratories are funded by the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, more affectionately known as DTRA, or DTRA, under a $2.1 billion military program, Cooperative Biological Engagement Program, called the CBEP, and are located in the former Soviet Union countries, such as Georgia and Ukraine, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, and, of course, in Africa. Didn't we know it? All right, let's scroll down. The U.S. Army has been deployed to Vance Military Air Base, 17 kilometers away from the Pentagon's biolaboratory at the Lugar Center. The Lugar Center is the Pentagon's biolaboratory in the former Soviet Georgia and is located just 17 kilometers away from a U.S. Vance military base in the capital of Tbilisi. Tasked with the military program are biologists from the U.S. Army Medical Research Unit, the Georgia USAMRU-G, along with private contractors, and the Biosafety Level 3 laboratory, which I find that disturbing, is accessible only to U.S. citizens with security clearance. They are accorded to the diplomatic immunity under the 2002 U.S.-Georgia Agreement on Defense Cooperation. DOD requirements for contractors under the DTRA program in the former Soviet Union countries such as Georgia, Ukraine, Uzbekistan, and Kazakhstan. Which again, that's disturbing in and of itself as well. The USA-Georgia agreement accords diplomatic status to any U.S. military or civilian personnel, including diplomatic vehicles, working on the Pentagon program in Georgia. Information obtained from the U.S. Federal Contracts Registry clarifies some of the military activities at the Lugar Center, among them research in bioagents such as anthrax and tularemia and viral diseases, e.g. the Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, and the collection of biological samples for future experiments. The Defense Threat Reduction Agency, the DTRA, has outsourced much of this work under the military program to private companies which are not held accountable to Congress and which can operate more freely and move around rules of the law. The U.S. civilian personnel working at the Lugar Center have also been given diplomatic immunity, although they are not diplomats. Hence, private companies can perform work under diplomatic cover for the U.S. government without being under the direct control over the host state, in this case, the Republic of Georgia. This practice is often used by the CIA to provide cover for their agents. Three private American companies work at the U.S. biolaboratory in Tbilisi, CH2M Hill, Patella, and Metabiota. In addition to the Pentagon, these private contractors perform biological research for the CIA and other government agencies. CH2M Hill has been awarded a $341.5 million DTRA contract under the Pentagon's program for biolaboratories in Georgia, Uganda, Tanzania, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Southeast Asia, and half of the sum, $161.1 million, is being allocated to the Luger Center under the Georgian contract. According to the CH2M Hill, the U.S. company has secured biological agents and employed former biowarfare scientists at the Luger Center. These are scientists who are working for another American company involving the military program in Georgia, and that would be Battelle Memorial Institute. Battelle is a $59 million subcontractor at the Luger Center and has extensive experience in researching bioagents, as the company has already worked on a U.S. bioweapons program under 11 previous contracts with the U.S. Army between 1952 and 1966. In 1966, that's when that biowarfare international convention that Nixon inked was ratified in 1972, if I am not mistaken. So that was when we had to officially, quote-unquote, wink, end our biowarfare program. The private company performs work for the Pentagon's DTRA biolaboratories in Afghanistan, Armenia, Georgia, Uganda, Tanzania, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Vietnam. Every time we hear the names, there's another country added. And Battelle conducts research, developmental testing, and evaluation using both highly toxic chemicals and highly pathogenic biological agents for a wide range of U.S. government agencies. It has been awarded some $2 billion, with a B, dollars in federal contracts in a total, and ranks 23rd on the top U.S. 100 U.S. government contractor list. The CIA Battelle Project Clear Vision. Project Clear Vision 1997 and in 2000 was a joint investigation by the CIA and Battelle Memorial Institute under a contract awarded by the agency, reconstructed and tested a Soviet-era anthrax bomblet in order to test its dissemination characteristics. The project's stated goal was to assess bioagent dissemination characteristics of a bomblet, and clandestine CIA Battelle operation was omitted from the U.S. Biological Weapons Convention declaration that was then submitted to the U.N. Of course it was. These are experiments going down long, dark hallways. Battelle has always operated a top-secret biolaboratory, which was the National Biodefense Analysis and Countermeasure Center, at Fort Detrick, Maryland, ding, ding, and under a U.S. Department of Homeland Security contract for the last decade. The company has been awarded a $344.4 million contract from 2006 to 2016 and another $17.3 million contract from 2015 to 2026 by the Department of Homeland Security. Amongst the secret experiments performed by Battelle are, one, assessment of the powder dissemination technology, number two, assessment of the hazard posed by aerosolized toxins, and number three, the assessment of the virulence of B. pseudomallea, or melanocytosis, which is a function of an aerosolized particle into non-human primates. Methyloidosis has the potential to be developed as a biological weapon, hence it is classed as a Category B bioterrorism agent. B. pseudomallea was studied by the U.S. as a potential bioweapon in the past. Besides the military experiments at the Luger Center in Georgia and Fort Detrick, Battelle has already produced bioterrorism agents at the biosafety level 4 at their top secret laboratory in Fort Detrick in the U.S. The presentation lists 16 research priorities for the lab, and amongst them, to characterize classical, emerging, and genetically engineered pathogens, ding, 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 for which you will need to be genetically modified to protect you against, for their biological threat agent potential, and assess the nature of non-traditional, novel, and non-endemic induction of disease from potential biological threat agents, and then expand the aerosolizing challenge testing capability for non-human primates. Pentagon Biolabs are at the epicenter of the Ebola crisis, and I think when that first happened, we discovered that, but let's read about it again. The U.S. company MetaBiota has been awarded an $18.4 million federal contract under the Pentagon's DTRA program in Georgia and the Ukraine for scientific and technical consulting services. Metabiota services include global field-based biological threat research, pathogen discovery, outbreak response, and clinical trials. Wink. Whether or not they are consensual, I will have to add there. Metabiota, accidentally or on purpose, Metabiota has been contracted by the Pentagon to perform work for the DTRA before and during the Ebola crisis in West Africa. It was awarded $3.1 million for work in Sierra Leone, one of the countries at the epicenter of the Ebola outbreak. Metabiota worked on a Pentagon project during the Ebola crisis where three U.S. biolabs are situated. And in July of 2014, there was a report drafted by the Viral Hemorrhagic Fever Consortium that accused Metabiota Inc. of failing to abide by an existing agreement on how to report test results and for bypassing Sierra Leonean scientists working there. The report also raised the possibility that Metabiota was culturing blood cells in the lab, something the report says was dangerous, as well as misdiagnosing healthy patients. All of those allegations were, of course, denied by Metabiota. So entomological warfare, and we've talked about this before, that is using insects as pathogen delivery vehicles. Entomological warfare is a type of biological warfare that uses insects to transmit diseases. Remember, they did a lot of research on entomological warfare and animals, especially at Plum Island. The Pentagon has allegedly performed such entomological tests in Georgia as well as Russia. In 2014, the Luger Center was equipped with an insect facility and launched a project called Raising Awareness About Barcoding of Sandflies in Georgia and Caucasus. The project covered a large geographical area outside of Georgia, and that would be Caucasus. In 2014-15, the phlebotomine sandfly species was collected under another project called Surveillance Work on Acute Febrile Illness, which is where all female sandflies were tested to determine the infectivity rate. There was then a third project, which also included sandfly collection, and they were studying the characteristics of their salivary glands. Remember when we read about a Japanese research project about utilizing mosquitoes as not only vaccination carriers, but also as disease spreaders, and how they could be flying syringes? And I don't think they didn't mess with this. So as a result, Tisbilly has been infested with biting flies since 2015, since we had three mad science research projects going on with these flies in our laboratory. And these biting insects live indoors in bathrooms and all year long, which is not the typical behavior of the species of fly that Georgia had previously seen. Local people complain of being bitten by these newly appeared flies while naked in their bathrooms. And they also have a strong resistance to the cold and can survive even in the sub-zero temperatures in the mountains. Now, that's crazy. Since the start of the Pentagon project in 2014, flies similar to those in Georgia have appeared in neighboring Dagestan, Russia. And according to local people, they bite and they cause rashes. And their breeding habits are also house drains. Oh, so they breed in the drains at houses. Flies from the phlebotomine family, it sounds like blood, phlebeto, carry dangerous parasites in their saliva, which they transmit to humans through a bite. And the disease which these flies carry is of high interest to the Pentagon. In 2003, during a U.S. invasion of Iraq, American soldiers were severely bitten by sandflies, and they contracted leishmaniasis. Remember, we were talking about that a long time ago. They were studying sand flies and whether or not they could carry a vaccination for leishmaniasis, which I believe is elephant man disease. The disease is native to Iraq and Afghanistan, and if left untreated, the acute form of leishmaniasis can be fatal. In 1967, a U.S. Army report called Arthropods of Medical Importance in Asia and the European USSR lists that all local insects, the distribution, and the diseases that they are carrying. Biting flies, which live in drains, are also listed in the document. Their natural habitats, though, are the Philippines, not Georgia or Russia. So that's interesting as well. So in 1970 and 72, sandfly fever tests were performed on humans according to a declassified U.S. military report. And during Operation White Coat, volunteers were exposed to the bites of infected sandflies. It was a biodefense medical research program carried out by the U.S. Army at Fort Detrick, Maryland between 1954 and 1973. And that's when that one doctor that I've always wanted to get in touch with that used to be a part of Fort Detrick. Oh, I don't remember. I'll have to remember tomorrow. I'll put him in the notes. Despite the official termination of the U.S. bioweapons program, in 1982, the USA MRIID performed an experiment. If sandflies and mosquitoes could be vectors of Rift Valley virus, dengue, chikungunya, and the Eastern equine encephalitis, viruses which the U.S. Army researched for the potential as bioweapons. The Pentagon has a long history of using insects as disease vectors, and according to a partially declassified 1981 U.S. Army report, American biowarfare scientists carried out a number of experiments on insects. These operations were part of the U.S. Entomological Warfare Program for the biological weapons in the U.S., and the Pentagon figured out how to kill 625,000 people for just 29 cents each. All right, guys, have an awesome Wednesday, and I'll catch up with you on Friday. Take care.
And somehow we have to make changes that will bring that down to zero. It's been constantly going up. It's only various economic changes that have even flattened it at all. So we have to go from rapidly rising to falling and falling all the way to zero. This equation has four factors, a little bit of multiplication. So you've got a thing on the left, CO2, that you want to get to zero. And that's going to be based on the number of people, the services each person's using on average, the energy on average for each service, and the CO2 being put out per unit of energy. So let's look at each one of these and see how we can get this down to zero. First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.